But on the line now is a man I was talking to. It's David Moore from Astronomy Ireland. Jez, I thought you were at the going into a sort of backing tracks there, David, and have some background music when you were talking. How's things?
Oh, very exciting at the moment. We just had the International Space Station flying over the country. There's one last chance to see it tonight, and we had a space chase after they launched a resupply craft on Friday, which we got to see. Quite tricky on Friday, but a lot of people got to see it on the Saturday. Mm-hmm. And skies were clear for once as well, and something interesting and exciting is happening.
Okay, but can I talk about the Star Barbecue? I know it's a long way away and we'll probably talk about it again, but is it happening this year?
Oh yes, it's all lined up for the 23rd of August this year. It's Saturday night, usually at the end of August or early September, when the moon is out of the way. So we can take all the giant telescopes that people bring from all around the country up to the highest village in Ireland and show people the wonders of the universe like they'll never see them in their lives unless they spend thousands and thousands of euros on telescopes and mm-hmm. build up the expertise as well.
How long is it going now, David? It's a good few years going now.
Yeah, I think our very first one, it was a small affair when it began, really just for members of the club back in 1992. So we're over 20 years doing it now, mm-hmm. and it's grown enormously now. We have a full program of events, professional caterers. In the old days, a few volunteer members donned their chef's hats and did the catering themselves. We might have had about 50 people or so coming along. We've had 10 times more than that now, and we take over the GAA grounds in Roundwood, which can seat up to 1,000 people, and we've nearly filled it on occasion. And, mm-hmm. you know, 50 giant telescopes across the playing pitch and hundreds of people getting to see star clusters and galaxies, the odd comet. Once we even had a huge fireball shoot across the sky. So it can be very exciting. And you know, those who have even seen the sky lots of times love getting out to see it all again.
Okay, now people can look up astronomy.ie because you have lots of facilities on there. For instance, people can get hold of your magazine, which is available in Dunn's now, I believe. But, Ted, what you were talking about, the space station and the race, you have text facility for going out if people want exact times. So tell us all about that.
Yeah, well, astronomy.ie, you'll see there the International Space Station link. Just click on that. Every evening, around sunset, we give the exact time to watch an hour or two later. The reason we leave it so late is they can fire the rockets on the space station to boost the orbit. So if you predict it a few days in advance, there's a chance it'll be out. Even on the day, it might get boosted during that day. Mm-hmm. You go out at the wrong time and miss it. So we just leave it at the last minute. Because the other thing is it going to be clear that night? It's usually visible for 2 weeks. So if you don't see it one night, you'll see it the next. So even when this set of passes ends tonight, there'll be more evening passes in June for about 2 weeks again. It's roughly 2 weeks every 2 months. That's a rough rule of thumb. So if you ever do miss it, it'll be along again in the future. It's funded till the 2020s. Some of us think it'll probably last till 2050, because at $100 billion, they're not going to replace that in a hurry.
Okay. Now, and you've upcoming lectures coming up as well, and you've summer schools, because more and more people are getting interested in astronomy. And I mean, it links with environmental issues as well, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, people who are interested in studying the universe are very curious about what's going on this planet and any effects we might be having on it, even just to the extent that, if you know, we had a great story there recently of this first Earth-sized planet found around a sun-like star in its habitable zone, a planet that could actually have water on it. And if that's the case, we expect it would lead to life. We're not sure, of course. And you know, one way of detecting life is to find out what's in its atmosphere. And unfortunately, we're putting things into the atmosphere that shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. But plants actually put the oxygen that we're all breathing there as well. And that's really a pollutant in its own right. It's not, it wouldn't be there by any other process other than life. And so if you can find oxygen in the atmosphere of a planet, you don't actually have to see the plants. You can actually tell from the light reflected off them if there is life on that planet. And it's very difficult to do for this planet that's about 500 light years away, but there are spacecraft being launched that have that particular goal in sight, and maybe in the next decade we might know.
I heard someone recently talking about aliens and all that sort of carry on, extraterrestrial, and when they were asked the question about lives on other planets, she didn't say it's not a question if there is. She said it's when we meet them. It could be 10 years, it could be 100 years, it could be 1,000 years, but she was in no doubt there was life somewhere out there.
Yeah, I think most scientists would tend to believe there must be life out there for two simple reasons. One is the vast number of stars that there are in the universe. I mean, our own galaxy has nearly a trillion planets in it. Now, a trillion is a million million. It's a very big number, hard to imagine. And in the universe that we can see, there's nearly a trillion galaxies. So you've actually got a trillion trillion stars. And that number is just unimaginably large. And if you think of how did life get started on the Earth, and the best research is if you just slosh around a lot of organic compounds in a watery ocean for long enough, the atoms of carbon like to form more and more complicated molecules. And the idea is, and this is the weak point in the idea, that by magic, as it were, eventually you develop the very large molecules, like DNA, that can self-replicate and do a lot of interesting things. And we don't think there's anything particularly special in how that happened, except for a lot of time in a very big laboratory, like a planet's oceans.
Yes.
And that's going to be replicated, we're pretty sure, all across the universe. So surely life must get started. The question is, does it then evolve into intelligent life? I mean, that took about 4 billion years here on the Earth.
I have to say, being facetious now, David, I often wonder about that when I'm looking at the programmes, the Oireachtas report, I mean, about intelligent life. I mean, it's crazy. by the way, I was watching a fantastic programme on BBC One last night in relation... I'm going off course here, but I said to myself, I'll have to ask David about this. And sun in relation to the Earth and animal life and all sorts of life except human. And it was absolutely fascinating to watch. For instance, there was one part on it that was about like iguanas and creatures like that, and how in the way the environment is actually changing, that they could actually fry inside of their own skin. About cheetahs having the capacity, and sometimes depending on what way the sun is, to chase as well as they could, and eagles and other animals. It was a fascinating program, but the environment and the sun, the important part it plays, and I'm sure, I mean, it was only going on about animals, but I'm sure it reflects with humans as well.
Well, we live in a very weird place. Most of the universe is extremely cold, about minus 270 degrees Celsius. That's the sort of normal temperature of the universe. It's only when you get near a star, very near a star, like the sun, that you start to find warm areas where this exotic chemistry can go on that ultimately becomes life. And linking back to that recent discovery, there's a little area around the star called the Goldilocks zone, where it's not too cold, not too hot, it's just right for liquid water to exist. And that habitable zone, as it's called, is a very narrow strip around each star. And to have a planet the size of the Earth, you don't want it too big or too small, so you can hang on to the water and not have other problems if the planet's too big. I think there's seven planets going around this particular star that had the Earth-like one going around. So the place is teeming with planets. So we just hope there'll be lots of Earth-sized ones in the habitable zones where it's nice and warm, very small place in the universe. But as I said, there could be trillions of those, and surely life must exist somewhere else other than here on the Earth. Even if we just found simple bacteria and it hadn't evolved into intelligent life, at least we'd know we're right about how we got started.
Okay, and finally, the Northern Lights, I know it's 6 months away coming up, the tour. Tell us about that.
We had a fantastic tour last year. It was sold out, and we're repeating it again this year because the sunspot maximum was last year. So the aurora of Northern Lights peak for two or three years after the maximum. So the next couple of years are the ideal time. You'll almost be guaranteed an aurora. We actually added a couple of days to the tour this year as well. And that's happening at the end of November. You'll get details on astronomy.ie/Norway. I think there's actually a direct link from the homepage anyway. Mm-hmm. And if anyone wants to sign up for that, you do need to book before July. So have a look at the details and talk to a few family and friends. And it's the expedition of a lifetime going into the Arctic Circle, where I've seen the aurora every night we've been there, that it's been clear. So we had three trips so far, and they've all been successfully seeing not just the aurora, but really good displays of the aurora. Absolutely fascinating, one of the most breathtaking sights I've ever seen, equal to a total eclipse of the sun. There won't be one of those in Ireland until the year 2090, and there won't be one in Dublin until the year 2600. So aurora easier to track down.
Okay.
So we're recommending that tour to anyone who wants to come along. There's loads of events on the website. You should sign up at least on the free email list and then join the club to get the magazine where everything is reported, what people are seeing, what's going to be happening next month, all that kind of thing. Relative to population, we're the biggest astronomy club in the world, and we're always looking for new members who are fascinated by space.
Okay, David, thank you very much. And as you say there on astronomy.ie, and you get all the information about everything coming up, the Starbecue, and also about the public lectures that you have as well.
Lecture on May the 12th, I think it is, the second Monday of May. And it's actually a lady from University of Limerick who was hoping to be one of those Lynx astronauts. Didn't get there in the end, unfortunately, but she does have experiments running in space, and they'll tell us all about it. The details are on the website.
Okay, thank you very much, Dave. It's always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
You too, Noel. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that's David Moore, Astronomy Ireland. Again, for details, the Northern Lights Tour, which is not coming up in November, but about the magazine, the public lectures, the summer schools, the Starbecue, and about membership, and then anything to do with astronomy, look up astronomy.ie.